We want to turn now to a story about work and whether in today's economy we're doing more of it than we realize. For example, when was the last time you bagged your own groceries, booked your own travel arrangements, pumped your own gas? Chances are it hasn't been long. But our next guest wants us to think twice about why we often spend so much of our time doing unpaid menial tasks. In a recent opinion piece in the New York Times, Craig Lambert wrote that we're taking on an increasing amount of what's called shadow work as machines replace low-level workers. In Craig's view, the robots have won. Craig Lambert is deputy editor of Harvard Magazine, and he joins us in the studio. Craig, thanks for coming in.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Craig, I first want you to explain more about why you think the robots have won. Because the idea with robotics and manufacturing were that they would free us of these repetitive menial tasks. But you think the opposite has happened?
In a lot of ways. We thought that robots and technology was going to free us of menial things. But ironically, quite often, what happens is the technology actually gives us more trivial tasks or menial tasks, repetitive tasks, and throws these things on our laps. The shadow work is often things that don't take any training to do. The time that I was in the supermarket a few months ago is when this idea first dawned on me. I was bagging and checking out my groceries at the self-service checkout, right? Uh-huh. And it suddenly dawned on me, how did I get hired as a supermarket bagger and checker?
So you think these things that have become just a part of daily life, when we pump our own gas, when we do self-checkout, we haven't realized that work has been transferred to us.
That's right. It kind of creeps up on us, little things that we don't even notice. Think about spam on your email account. You have to delete spam every day. There was one study that said American adults spend an average of 1.4 minutes per day deleting spam. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but that adds up to 9 hours a year of completely unproductive time. And these are these kind of things that creep up on our day, and we don't notice them, but they are very much there.
But with every new technology, it brings benefits, and then there are some trade-offs, things that we might not wish they brought along with them. So are you saying you feel like the trade-off here with a lot of modern technology is not worth the benefit?
Well, we don't volunteer for it. Let's put it that way. You will go into certain supermarkets now, and there will be not only self-service checkout, but a scanner that you can take off the wall and scan each one of your own purchases. Now, it may be that you save time. You save time pumping your own gas, perhaps. But the fact is that you really have to do it in most states. There just isn't any service of that kind offered anymore, and so we don't have the choice anymore of doing it.
This term shadow work was coined about 30 years ago by an Austrian philosopher, and the classic shadow work is often thought of as housework, unpaid housework. Give us some of the more modern examples beyond the ones we've already talked about, self-checkout. What else do you think is shadow work today that we may not think of as burden work that we've taken on?
Well, there's a lot of examples right in the office. Now, that's not completely unpaid, since we are generally earning a salary when we're in offices, but part of the appeal of that Mad Men TV show is the nostalgic idea of the 50s when there were executive washrooms and secretaries and dictation.
Big support staffs.
Yeah, the support staff have disappeared pretty much. And instead, we type our own letters on our own computers. We handle our own correspondence. We mail the letters ourselves. We do the postage part. We do all of the photocopying ourselves. There used to be support staff who would handle some of these tasks, and those people have pretty much disappeared.
Isn't that a great equalizer in a way? We don't have these lowly, poorly treated secretaries and clerical workers. Instead, even managerial staff are often doing their own photocopying, printing their own documents.
Yes, that is part of what I call the democratization of expertise. We all pitch in now from senior management to the most new hire. But when I say the democratization of expertise, I'm talking about the ways in which something like the job of a travel agent has diminished so much.
Disappeared in many ways.
Because we used to think, well, travel agents are people that spent years learning how to do this. They had a special fund of knowledge. They took them years to understand the software and the deal making and hotels. And then suddenly, technology put in our own laps the chance to do it ourselves. And what happens is we're instantly expected to become our own travel agents.
And there are upsides and downsides to that. One of the downsides is that many travel agents lost their jobs. One of the upsides is that many more people now have developed the skills to hunt for good deals on airlines and so forth. So how do you balance whether we gained more or lost more in that?
Well, we get more autonomy from shadow work very often, even if it is something as simple as checking out your own groceries. You do it at your pace and your way. On the other hand, it does cut you off from other people. There's a price that's paid there in terms of human connection. These small services that we would do for each other, or larger services, travel agency was a fairly significant thing. And those are disappearing, and in a sense, these robotic interventions are dissolving those bonds of community.
You mentioned this in your article in the New York Times, and I found myself trying to decide whether I agree with that. You talked about it being an erosion of at least one aspect of civility, in a sense. When I think about when you used to go to the gas station, oftentimes an attendant would wash your windshield. That doesn't happen anymore. I think I'm glad it doesn't happen, because it felt to me a little bit like a servant relationship. So in that sense, again, have we equalized in a way that's for the better?
You know, there is a definite possibility that people will feel more comfortable doing many of these things for themselves. I think in America we have an ambivalent relationship about getting personal service. And that may be one reason why we have a sort of this large prevalence of tipping in our society, to kind of compensate for that.
Our guilt, perhaps, at someone waiting on us?
That's right. We don't have a tradition of nobility or hired servants as they might have in England. And in America, we've never been quite fully comfortable with the servant class working for us.
Craig, there's a website called Smart Planet that critiqued your ideas, and it concluded that, and here I'm quoting, "The move to self-service is one of convenience and empowerment, enabling customers to be able to make more choices and putting people more in charge of their own well-being." I'm wondering if airlines are an example of that, because many of them have eliminated free meal service, which in theory should reduce ticket prices, and which now has many of us bringing our own food on flights, food we like better and that's healthier than airline food. Is that an example of shadow work being good for us?
Well, sure. There are a great number of activities that come under the shadow work umbrella, and some are more or less completely painless. Think about putting a transponder on your windshield to go through the fast lane on the turnpike. You are doing basically nothing in terms of work other than once you've mounted that transponder and set up your account. However, you may have eliminated the job of a toll taker. Now, that's pretty painless, and shadow work often does cause a lot of convenience. I was at a frozen yogurt place on the Jersey Shore last summer where they had three nozzles on the wall, and you would take a dish and serve your own frozen yogurt. And you could mix just the flavors you want in the very way you want and the amount you want, and all you had to do, they had one employee who would weigh it and charge you. It's often gotten to be that the one employee around is the person who is there to take your money.
And certainly what you've described means there are fewer jobs in the end. But it's a big time saver for the person getting the yogurt. It's a money saver for the person who runs the company. I'm feeling like the example you give, at least in this case, is much more good than bad for society.
Well, shadow work certainly has a lot of benefits. And if I were a business owner, I would find ways to cultivate it. There are many ways that consumers appreciate the chance to do shadow work. For example, take the IKEA effect. That's a phrase that was invented by Professor Michael Norton at Harvard Business School. He and his colleagues had done some research that showed IKEA, the well-known Swedish furniture store that often sells things that require assembly at home, gets a lot of customer satisfaction points out of the fact that people build their own furniture, that they value it more highly when they make it themselves. So that's good for the customer, and it's good for IKEA.
Your reference to transponders for the tolls reminds me that you also mentioned driving or commuting as shadow work. Now, certainly, if we have to sit in terrible gridlock traffic to get to our jobs, that's quite a burden. But do you really consider shadow work so all-encompassing that you put driving into that?
Well, I'm going back to Ivan Illich's definition of shadow work.
The Austrian philosopher who coined that term.
That is correct. And he spoke about the fact that shadow work always arises in an industrial economy when we get away from the subsistence economy. The basic subsistence economy is where people do activities that are directly related to survival. They build fires, they gather food, they feed you, they clothe you, they keep you warm. As soon as money enters the equation, we get activities that are not directly related to our survival. And that includes going to a job to earn money. And that includes shadow work of driving your car to that job. So in that larger sense, commuting is a type of shadow work.
Craig Lambert, if you had to look into the future and guess what the future types of shadow work will be that we can't imagine one day we'll also end up doing, what do you think those might be? What's still to come?
Well, I think it will increase. The trend is towards more shadow work. And it can go into areas that we either think of as menial tasks or areas like medicine and law and education. Homeschooling is probably the ultimate example of shadow work for parents who want to educate their own kids. But you also see at the other end parents driving their children to school. That used to be the job of a school bus driver. In law, you can now download forms and maybe become your own lawyer and save those giant legal fees if you are bold enough to do so. In medicine, the patients are being given much more autonomy and authority. We have patients who get some drastic diagnosis who will then go online and start researching their own diagnosis and find out the best course of treatment. Now, that's a nice ability to have, but it could be hours and days and weeks of work.
And it does lead to fatigue, as you talk about in your article.
Yes, these tasks do fatigue us. We're doing a lot of work that we didn't used to do. Americans already work a great deal. Juliet Shore, an economist at Boston College, wrote a book a generation ago called The Overworked American about just the tremendous amount of work that our nation does compared to, say, Europe. And fatigue will creep up on us, particularly in that we do not notice it happening. These tasks are often, as we were saying, subtly entered into our job descriptions without our even knowing it.
Craig Lambert is deputy editor of Harvard Magazine. Craig, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you.